Chapter 35. Steading Tsofu. The river hills on which the city Kyrian stood gave way to flatter lands and forests when Rand and the others had ridden half a day, the Shinarans still with their armor on the pack horses. There were no roads where they went, only a scattering of cart tracks and few farms or villages. Varin pressed for speed, and Ingtar, grumbling constantly that they were letting themselves be tricked, that Fain would never have told them where he was really going, yet grumbling at the same time about riding in the opposite direction from Tomanhead, as if part of him believed and Tomanhead were not months away except by the way they took. Ingtar obliged her. The gray owl banner flew on the wind of their passage. Rand rode with grim determination, avoiding conversation with Varin. He had this thing to do, this duty, Ingtar would have called it, and then he could be free of Aes Sedai once and for all. Perrin seemed to share something of his mood, staring straight ahead at nothing as they rode. When they finally stopped for the night at the edge of a forest, with full dark almost on them, Perrin asked loyal questions about the steading. Trollocs would never enter a steading, would wolves? Loyal replied shortly that it was only creatures of the shadow that were reluctant to enter steading. And Aes Sedai, of course, since they could not touch the true source inside a steading, or channel the one power. The Ogier himself appeared the most reluctant of all to go to steading Tsofu. Matt was the only one who seemed eager, almost desperately so. His skin looked as if he had not seen the sun in a year, and his cheeks had begun to go hollow, though he said he felt ready to run a foot race. Varin put her hands on him for healing before he rolled into his blankets and again before they mounted their horses in the morning. But it made no difference in how he looked. Even Huron frowned when he looked at Matt. The sun stood high on the second day when Varin suddenly sat up straight in her saddle and looked around. Beside her, Ingtar gave a start. Rand could not see anything different about the forest now surrounding them. The undergrowth was not too thick. They had found an easy way under the canopy of oak and hickory, black gum and beech, pierced here and there by a tall pine or leatherleaf, or the white slash of a paper bark. But as he followed them, he suddenly felt a chill pass through him, as though he had leaped into a waterwood pond in winter. It flashed through him and was gone, leaving behind a feeling of refreshment, and there was a dull and distant sense of loss, too, though he could not imagine of what. Every rider, as he reached that point, gave a jerk or made some exclamation. Huron's mouth dropped open, and Una whispered,
"Bloody flaming."
Then he shook his head as if he could not think of anything else to say. There was a look of recognition in Perrin's yellow eyes. Loyal took a deep, slow breath and let it out.
"It feels good to be back in a steading."
Frowning, Rand looked around. He had expected a steading to be somehow different, but except for that one chill, the forest was the same as what they had been riding through all day. There was the sudden sense of being rested, of course. Then an ogier stepped out from behind an oak. She was shorter than Loyal, which meant she stood head and shoulders taller than Rand, but with the same broad nose and big eyes, the same wide mouth and tufted ears. Her eyebrows were not so long as Loyal's, though, and her features seemed delicate beside his, the tufts on her ears finer. She wore a long green dress and a green cloak embroidered with flowers and carried a bunch of silver bell blossoms, as if she had been gathering them. She looked at them calmly, waiting. Loyal scrambled down from his tall horse and bowed hastily. Rand and the others did the same, if not so quickly as Loyal. Even Varin inclined her head. Loyal gave their names formally, but he did not mention the name of his steading. For a moment, the Ogier girl, Rand was sure she was no older than Loyal, studied them, then smiled.
"Be welcome to steading Tsofu."
Her voice was a lighter version of Loyal's, too, the softer rumble of a smaller bumblebee.
"I am Aerith, daughter of Iva, daughter of Alar. Be welcome. We have had so few human visitors since the stonemasons left Kyrian, and now so many at once. Why, we even had some of the traveling people, though, of course, they left when the... Oh, I talk too much. I will take you to the elders, only..."
She searched among them for the one in charge and settled finally on Varin.
"Aes Sedai, you have so many men with you and armed. Could you please leave some of them outside? Forgive me, but it is always unsettling to have very many armed humans in the steading at once.
Of course, Aerith, Varen said. Ingtar will see to it. Ingtar gave orders to Uno, and so it was that he and Huron were the only Shinarans to follow Aerith deeper into the steading. Leading his horse like the others, Rand looked up as Loyal came closer, with many glances at Aerith up ahead with Varen and Ingtar. Huron walked midway between, staring around in amazement, though Rand was not sure at what exactly. Loyal bent to speak quietly.
Is she not beautiful, Rand? And her voice sings.
Matt snickered, but when Loyal looked at him questioningly, he said, Very pretty, Loyal. A little tall for my taste, you understand, but very pretty, I'm sure. Loyal frowned uncertainly, but nodded.
Yes, she is.
His expression lightened.
It does feel good to be back in a steading. Not that the longing was taking me, you understand.
The longing? Perrin said. I do not understand, Loyal.
We Ogier are bound to the steading, Perrin. It is said that before the breaking of the world, we could go where we wished for as long as we wished, like you humans. But that changed with the breaking. Ogier were scattered like every other people, and they could not find any of the steading again. Everything was moved. Everything changed. Mountains, rivers, even the seas.
Everybody knows about the breaking, Matt said impatiently. What does it have to do with this longing?
It was during the exile, while we wandered lost, that the longing first came on us. The desire to know the steading once more. To know our homes again. Many died of it.
Loyal shook his head sadly.
More died than lived. When we finally began to find the steading again, one at a time, in the years of the Covenant of the Ten Nations, it seemed we had defeated the longing at last. But it had changed us, put seeds in us. Now if an Ogier is outside too long, the longing comes again. He begins to weaken, and he dies if he does not return.
Do you need to stay here a while? Rand asked anxiously. There's no need to kill yourself to go with us.
I will know it when it comes, Loyal laughed. It will be long before it is strong enough to cause harm to me. Why, Dalar spent 10 years among the sea folk without ever seeing a steading, and she came safely home.
An Ogier woman appeared out of the trees, pausing a moment to speak with Aerith and Varen. She looked Ingtar up and down and seemed to dismiss him, which made him blink. Her eyes swept across Loyal, flicked over Huron and the Emmonsfielders, before she went off into the forest again. Loyal seemed to be trying to hide behind his horse.
Besides, he said, peering cautiously across his saddle after her, it is a dull life in the steading compared to traveling with 3 Ta'veren.
If you are going to start that again, Matt muttered, and Loyal spoke up quickly.
3 friends, then. You are my friends, I hope.
I am, Rand said simply, and Perrin nodded. Matt laughed. How could I not be friends with somebody who dices so badly? He threw up his hands when Rand and Perrin looked at him. Oh, all right, I like you, Loyal. You're my friend. Just don't go on about... Ah! Sometimes you're as bad to be around as Rand. His voice sank to a mutter. At least we're safe here in a steading. Rand grimaced. He knew what Matt meant. Here in a steading, where I can't channel. Perrin punched Matt's shoulder, but looked sorry that he had when Matt grimaced at him with that gaunt face. It was the music Rand became aware of first, unseen flutes and fiddles in a jolly tune that floated through the trees, and deep voices singing and laughing. Clear the field, smooth it low, let no weed or stubble stand. Here we labor, here we toil, here the towering trees will grow. Almost at the same moment, he realized that the huge shape he was seeing through the trees was a tree itself, with a rigid, buttressed trunk that must have been 20 paces thick. Gaping, he followed it up with his eyes, up through the forest canopy, to branches spreading like the top of a gigantic mushroom, a good 100 paces above the ground. And beyond it were taller still. Burn me, Matt breathed. You could build 10 houses from just one of those. 50 houses.
Cut down a great tree?
Loyal sounded scandalized, and more than a little angry. His ears were stiff and still, his long eyebrows down on his cheeks.
We never cut down one of the great trees, not unless it dies, and they almost never do. Few survived the breaking, but some of the largest were seedlings during the Age of Legends.
I'm sorry, Matt said. I was just saying how big they are. I won't hurt your trees. Loyal nodded, seeming mollified. More Ogier appeared now, walking among the trees. Most seemed intent on whatever they were about. Though all looked at the newcomers and even gave a friendly nod or a small bow, none stopped or spoke. They had a curious way of moving, in some manner blending a careful deliberateness with an almost childlike carefree joyfulness. They knew and liked who and what they were and where they were, and they seemed at peace with themselves and everything around them. Rand found himself envying them. Few of the Ogier men were any taller than Loyal, but it was easy to pick out the older men. One and all, they wore mustaches as long as their dangling eyebrows and narrow beards under their chins. All of the younger were smooth-shaven, like Loyal. Many of the men were in their shirt sleeves and carried shovels and mattocks or saws and buckets of pitch. The others wore plain coats that buttoned to the neck and flared about their knees like kilts. The women seemed to favor embroidered flowers, and many wore flowers in their hair, too. The embroidery was limited to the cloaks of the younger women. The older women's dresses were embroidered as well, and some women with gray hair had flowers and vines from neck to hem. A handful of the Ogier, women and girls for the most part, did seem to take special notice of Loyal. He walked staring straight ahead, ears twitching more wildly the further they went. Rand was startled to see an Ogier apparently walking up out of the ground, out of one of the grassy, wildflower-covered mounds that lay scattered all among the trees here. Then he saw windows in the mounds, and an Ogier woman standing at one apparently rolling a pie crust, and realized he was looking at Ogier homes. The window frames were stone, but they not only seemed natural formations, they appeared to have been sculpted by wind and water over generations. The great trees, with their massive trunks and spreading roots as thick as horses, needed a great deal of room between them, but several grew right in the town. Dirt ramps took the paths over the roots. In fact, aside from the pathways, the only way to tell town from forest at a glance was a large open space in the center of the town, around what could only be the stump of one of the great trees. Nearly 100 paces across, its surface was polished as smooth as any floor, and there were steps built up to it at several places. Rand was imagining how tall that tree had been when Aerith spoke loudly enough for them all to hear.
Here come our guests.
3 human women came walking around the side of the huge stump. The youngest were carrying a wooden bowl.
Aiel, Ingtar said. Maidens of the Spear. As well I did leave Massima with the others.
Yet he stepped away from Varen and Aerith and reached over his shoulder to loosen his sword in its scabbard. Rand studied the Aiel with an uneasy curiosity. They were what too many people had tried to tell him he was. 2 of the women were mature, the other little more than a girl, but all 3 were tall for women. Their short-cut hair ranged from a reddish-brown to almost golden, with a narrow shoulder-length tail left long at the back. They wore loose breeches tucked into soft boots, and all their clothes were some shade of brown or gray or green. He thought the garments would fade into rock or woods almost as well as a warder's cloak. Short bows poked over their shoulders, and quivers and long knives hung at their belts, and each carried a small round shield of hide and a cluster of spears with short shafts and long points. Even the youngest moved with a grace that suggested she knew how to use the weapons she carried. Abruptly, the women became aware of the other humans. They seemed as startled at being startled as they did at the sight of Rand and the others, but they moved like lightning. The youngest one shouted,
"Shinarins!"
and turned to set the bowl carefully behind her. The other 2 quickly lifted brown cloths from around their shoulders, wrapping them around their heads instead. The older women were raising black veils across their faces, hiding everything but their eyes, and the youngest straightened to imitate them. Crouching low, they advanced at a deliberate pace, shields held forward with their clusters of spears, except for the one each woman held ready in her other hand. Ingtar's sword came out of its sheath.
Stand clear, Aes Sedai. Aerith, stand clear.
Huron snatched out his sword breaker, wavered between cudgel and sword for his other hand. After another glance at the Aiel's spears, he chose the sword.
You must not,
the Ogier girl protested. Wringing her hands, she turned from Ingtar to the Aiel and back.
You must not.
Rand realized the Heronmark blade was in his hands. Perrin had his axe half out of the loop at his belt and was hesitating, shaking his head.
Are you too crazy?
Matt demanded. His bow still slanted across his back.
I don't care if they are Aiel. They're women. Stop this, Varen demanded. Stop this immediately.
The Aiel never broke stride, and the Aes Sedai clenched her fists in frustration. Matt moved back to put a foot in his stirrup.
I'm leaving, he announced. You hear me? I'm not staying to let them stick those things in me, and I'm not going to shoot a woman.
The pact, Loyal was shouting. Remember the pact.
It had no more effect than the continued pleas from Varen and Aerith. Rand noticed that both the Aes Sedai and the Ogier girl were keeping well out of the Aiel's way. He wondered if Matt had the right idea. He was not sure he could hurt a woman, even if she was trying to kill him. What decided him was the thought that even if he did manage to reach Red Saddle, the Aiel were now no more than 30 paces away. He suspected those short spears could be thrown that far. As the women came closer, still crouching, spears ready, he stopped worrying about not hurting them and began worrying about how to stop them from hurting him. Nervously, he sought the void, and it came. And the distant thought floated outside it that it was only the void. The glow of Sidene was not there. The emptiness was more empty than he had ever remembered. Vaster, like a hunger great enough to consume him. A hunger for more. There was supposed to be something more. Abruptly, an Ogier strode in between the two groups, his narrow beard quivering.
What is the meaning of this? Put up your weapons.
He sounded scandalized.
For you.
His glare took in Ingtar and Huron, Rand and Perrin, and did not spare Matt for all his empty hands.
There is some excuse, but for you.
He rounded on the Aiel women, who had stopped their advance.
Have you forgotten the pact?
The women uncovered their heads and faces so hastily that it seemed they were trying to pretend they had never been covered. The girl's face was bright red, and the other women looked abashed. One of the older women, the one with the reddish hair, said,
Forgive us, tree brother. We remember the pact, and we would not have bared steel, but we are in the land of the tree killers, where every hand is against us. And we saw armed men.
Her eyes were gray, Rand saw, like his own.
You are in a stenning, Rian,
the Ogier said gently.
Everyone is safe in the stenning, little sister. There is no fighting here, and no hand raised against another.
She nodded, ashamed, and the Ogier looked at Ingtar and the others. Ingtar sheathed his sword, and Rand did the same, though not so quickly as Huron, who looked almost as embarrassed as the Aiel. Perrin had never gotten his axe all the way out. As he took hand from hilt, Rand let the void go too, and shivered. The void went, but it left behind a slowly fading echo of the emptiness all through him, and a desire for something to fill it. The Ogier turned to Varen and bowed.
Aes Sedai, I am Juon. Son of Laesel, son of Laud. I have come to take you to the elders. They would know why an Aes Sedai comes among us with armed men and one of our own youths.
Loyal hunched his shoulders as if trying to disappear. Varen gave the Aiel a regretful look as if she wanted to talk with them, then motioned Juon to lead, and he took her away without another word or even the first look at Loyal. For a few moments, Rand and the others stood facing the three Aiel women uneasily. At least Rand knew he was uneasy. Ingtar seemed steady as a stone, with no more expression than one. The Aiel might have unveiled their faces, but they still had spears in their hands, and they studied the four men as though trying to see inside them. Rand in particular received increasingly angry looks. He heard the youngest woman mutter, "He is wearing a sword. in tones of mingled horror and contempt. Then the three were leaving, stopping to retrieve the wooden bowl and looking over their shoulders at Rand and the others until they vanished among the trees.
"Maidens of the Spear," Ingtar muttered. "I never thought they'd stop once they veiled their faces. Certainly not for a few words."
He looked at Rand and his two friends.
"You should see a charge by red shields or stone dogs. As easy to stop as an avalanche."
"They would not break the pact once it was recalled to them," Aerith said, smiling. "They came for Sungwood."
A note of pride entered her voice.
"We have two tree singers in Steading Tsofu. They are rare now. I have heard that Steading Shangtai has a young tree singer who is very talented, but we have two."
Loyal blushed, but she did not appear to notice.
"If you will come with me, I will show you where you may wait until the elders have spoken."
As they followed her, Perrin muttered, "Sungwood, my left foot. Those Aiel are searching for he who comes with the dawn." And Matt added dryly,
"They're looking for you, Rand." "For me? That is crazy. What makes you think—"
He cut off as Aerith showed them down the steps of a wildflower-covered house, apparently set aside for human guests. The rooms were 20 paces from stone wall to stone wall, with painted ceilings a good 2 spans above the floor. But the Ogier had done their best, making something that would be comfortable for humans. Even so, the furniture was a little too large for comfort, the chairs tall enough to lift a man's heels off the floor, the table higher than Rand's waist. Huron, at least, could have walked erect in the stone fireplace, which seemed to have been worn by water rather than made by hands. Aerith eyed Loyal doubtfully, but he waved away her concern and pulled one of the chairs into the corner least easily seen from the door. As soon as the Ogier girl left, Rand got Matt and Perrin over to one side.
"What do you mean they're looking for me? Why? For what reason? They looked right at me and went away."
"They looked at you," Matt said with a grin, "like you hadn't bathed in a month and had doused yourself with sheep dip besides."
His grin faded.
"But they could be looking for you.
We met another Aiel."
Rand listened in growing amazement to their tale of the meeting in Kinslayer's Dagger. Matt told most of it, with Perrin putting in a correcting word now and again, when he embellished too much. Matt made a great show of how dangerous the Aielman had been, and how close the meeting had come to a fight.
"And since you're the only Aiel we know," he finished, "well, it could be you. Ingtar says Aiel never live outside the waste, so you must be the only one."
"I don't think that's funny, Matt," Rand growled. "I am not an Aiel."
"The Amaran said you are. Ingtar thinks you are. Tam said he was sick, fevered."
They had severed the roots he had thought he had, the Aes Sedai and Tam between them, though Tam had been too sick to know what he was saying. They had cut him loose to tumble before the wind, then offered him something new to hold on to. False dragon, Aiel. He could not claim those for roots. He would not.
"Maybe I don't belong to anyone, but the Two Rivers is the only home I know."
"I didn't mean anything," Matt protested. "It's just—" "Burn me, Ingtar says you are, Massima says you are, Urien could have been your cousin, and if Rian put on a dress and said she was your aunt, you'd believe it yourself."
"Oh, all right. Don't look at me like that, Perrin. If he wants to say he isn't, all right. What difference does it make anyway?"
Perrin shook his head. Ogier girls brought water and towels for washing faces and hands, and cheese and fruit and wine, with pewter goblets a little too large to be comfortable in the hand. Other Ogier women came too, their dresses all embroidered. One by one they appeared, a dozen of them all told, to ask if the humans were comfortable, if they needed anything. Each turned her attentions to Loyal just before she left. He gave his answers respectfully, but in as few words as Rand had ever heard him use, standing with an Ogier-sized wood-bound book clutched to his chest like a shield, and when they went, he huddled in his chair with the book held up in front of his face. The books in the house were one thing not sized for humans.
"Just smell this air, Lord Rand," Huron said, filling his lungs with a smile.
His feet dangled from one of the chairs at the table. He swung them like a boy.
"I never thought most places smelled bad, but this... Lord Rand, I don't think there's ever been any killing here. Not even any hurting, except by accident."
"The Steading are supposed to be safe for everyone," Rand said. He was watching Loyal. That's what the stories say, anyway. He swallowed a last bit of white cheese and went over to the Ogier. Matt followed with a goblet in his hand.
What's the matter, Loyal? Rand said. You've been as nervous as a cat in a dogyard ever since we came here.
It is nothing,
Loyal said, giving the door an uneasy glance from the corner of his eye.
Are you afraid they'll find out you left Steading Shangtai without permission from your elders?
Loyal looked around wildly, the tufts on his ears vibrating.
Don't say that,
he hissed.
Not where anyone can hear. If they found out...
With a heavy sigh, he slumped back, looking from Rand to Matt.
I don't know how humans do it, but among Ogier, if a girl sees a boy she likes, she goes to her mother. Or sometimes the mother sees someone she thinks is suitable. In any case, if they agree, the girl's mother goes to the boy's mother, and the next thing the boy knows, his marriage is all arranged.
Doesn't the boy have any say in it? Matt asked incredulously.
None. The women always say we would spend our lives married to the trees if it was left to us.
Loyal shifted, grimacing.
Half of our marriages take place between Steading. Groups of young Ogier visit from Steading to Steading so they can see and be seen. If they discover I'm outside without permission, the elders will almost certainly decide I need a wife to settle me down. Before I know it, they'll have sent a message to Steading Shangtai to my mother, and she will come here and have me married before she washes the dust off her journey. She always said I am too hasty and need a wife. I think she was looking when I left. Whatever wife she chooses for me, well, any wife at all, won't let me go back outside until I have gray in my beard. Wives always say no man should be allowed outside until he's settled enough to control his temper.
Matt gave a guffaw loud enough to draw every head, but at Loyal's frantic gesture, he spoke softly.
Among us, men do the choosing, and no wife can stop a man doing what he wants.
Rand frowned, remembering how Egwene had begun following him around when they were both little. It was then that Mistress Alvir had begun taking a special interest in him, more than in any of the other boys. Later, some girls would dance with him on feast days, and some would not. And those who would were always Egwene's friends, while those who would not were girls Egwene did not like. He also seemed to remember Mistress Alvir taking Tam aside,
and she was muttering about Tam not having a wife for her to talk to.
And after that, Tam and everyone else had acted as if he and Egwene were promised, even though they had not knelt before the women's circle to say the words. He had never thought about it this way before. Things between Egwene and him had always just seemed to be the way they were, and that was that.
I think we do it the same way, he muttered, and when Matt laughed, he added,
Do you remember your father ever doing anything your mother really didn't want him to? Matt opened his mouth with a grin, then frowned thoughtfully and closed it again. Juan came down the steps from outside.
If you please, will all of you come with me? The elders would see you.
He did not look at Loyal, but Loyal still almost dropped the book.
If the elders try to make you stay, Rand said, we'll say we need you to go with us. I'll bet it isn't about you at all, Matt said. I'll bet they are just going to say we can use the waygate.
He shook himself, and his voice fell even lower.
We really have to do it, don't we?
It was not a question.
Stay and get married or travel the ways,
Loyal grimaced ruefully.
Life is very unsettling with Taviran for friends.
Chapter 36 Among the Elders. As Juan took them through the Ogier town, Rand saw that Loyal was growing more and more anxious. Loyal's ears were as stiff as his back. His eyes grew bigger every time he saw another Ogier looking at him, especially the women and girls, and a large number of them did seem to take notice of him. He looked as if he expected his own execution. The bearded Ogier gestured to wide steps leading down into a grassy mound that was bigger by far than any other. It was a hill, for all practical purposes, almost at the base of one of the great trees.
Why don't you wait out here, Loyal? Rand said.
The elders,
Juan began.
Probably just want to see the rest of us, Rand finished for him. Why don't they leave him alone? Matt put in.
Loyal nodded vigorously.
Yes, I think...
A number of Ogier women were watching him, from white-haired grandmothers to daughters Aerith's age, a knot of them talking among themselves, but with all eyes on him. His ears jerked, but he looked at the broad door to which the stone steps led down and nodded again.
"Yes, I will sit out here and I'll read. That is it, I will read."
Fumbling in his coat pocket, he produced a book. He settled himself on the mound beside the steps, the book small in his hands, and fixed his eyes on the pages.
"I will just sit here and read until you come out."
His ears twitched as if he could feel the women's eyes. Juan shook his head, then shrugged and motioned to the steps again.
"If you please, the elders are waiting."
The huge windowless room inside the mound was scaled for Ogier, with a thick beamed ceiling, more than 4 spans up. It could have fit in any palace, for size at least. The 7 Ogier seated on the dais directly in front of the door made it shrink a little by their size, but Rand still felt as if he were in a cavern. The somber floor stones were smooth, if large and irregular in shape, but the gray walls could have been the rough side of a cliff. The ceiling beams, rough-hewn as they were, looked like great roots. Except for a high-backed chair where Varen sat facing the dais, the only furnishings were the heavy, vine-covered chairs of the elders. The Ogier woman in the middle of the dais sat in a chair raised a little higher than those of the others, 3 bearded men to her left in long, flaring coats, 3 women to her right in dresses like her own, embroidered in vines and flowers from neckline to hem. All had aged faces and pure white hair, even to the tufts on their ears, and an air of massive dignity. Huron gaped at them openly, and Rand felt like staring himself. Not even Varen had the appearance of wisdom that was in the elder's huge eyes, nor more gaze in her crown their authority, nor Moraine their calm serenity. Ingtar was the first to bow, as formally as Rand had ever seen from him, while the others still stood rooted.
"I am Allah,"
the Ogier woman on the highest chair said, when they had finally taken their places beside Varen.
"Eldest of the elders of Stelling Tsofu. Varen has told us that you have need to use the waygate here. To recover the Horn of Valir from Dark Friends is a great need indeed, but we have allowed none to travel the ways in more than 100 years, neither us nor the elders of any other Stedding."
"I will find the horn," Ingtar said angrily. "I must. If you will not permit us to use the waygate..."
He fell silent as Varen looked at him, but the scowl remained on his face. Alar smiled.
"Be not so hasty, Shinaran. You humans never take time for thought. Only decisions reached in calm can be sure."
Her smile faded to seriousness, but her voice kept its own measured calm.
"The dangers of the ways are not to be faced with a sword in your hand, not charging Aiel or ravening Trollocs. I must tell you that to enter the ways is to risk not only death and madness, but perhaps your very souls."
"We have seen much in Shin," Rand said, and Matt and Perrin agreed.
They could not manage to sound eager to do it again.
"I will follow the horn to Sheol Ghul itself, if need be," Ingtar said firmly.
Huron only nodded as if including himself in Ingtar's words.
"Bring Treol,"
Alar commanded, and Juin, who had remained by the door, bowed and left.
"It is not enough," she told Varen, "to hear what can happen. You must see it, know it in your heart."
There was an uncomfortable silence until Juin returned, and it became more uncomfortable still as 2 Ogier women followed him, guiding a dark-bearded Ogier of middle years who shambled between them as if he did not quite know how his legs worked. His face sagged without any expression at all, and his big eyes were vacant and unblinking, not staring, not looking, not even seeming to see. One of the women gently wiped drool from the corner of his mouth. They took his arms to stop him. His foot went forward, hesitated, then fell back with a thump. He seemed as content to stand as to walk, or at least as uncaring.
"Treol was one of the last among us to go along the ways,"
Alar said softly.
"He came out as you see him. Will you touch him, Varen?"
Varen gave her a long look, then rose and strode to Treol. He did not move as she laid her hands on his wide chest, not even a flicker of an eye to acknowledge her touch. With a sharp hiss, she jerked back, staring up at him, then whirled to face the elders.
He is empty. This body lives, but there is nothing inside it. Nothing.
Every elder wore a look of unbearable sadness.
Nothing,
one of the elders to Allah's right said softly. Her eyes seemed to hold all the pain Trails no longer could.
No mind, no soul. Nothing of Trail remains but his body.
He was a fine tree singer,
one of the men sighed. Allah motioned, and the two women turned Trail to lead him out. They had to move him before he began to walk.
We know the risks, Varen said. But whatever the risks, we must follow the Horn of Valir.
The eldest nodded.
The Horn of Valir. I do not know whether it is worse news that it is in Darkfriend hands, or that it has been found at all.
She looked down the row of elders. Each nodded in turn, one of the men tugging his beard doubtfully first.
Very well. Varen tells me time is urgent. I will show you to the waygate myself.
Rand was feeling half relieved and half afraid when she added,
You have with you a young Ogier, loyal, son of Arendt, son of Hullin, from Stilling Shangtai. He is far from his home.
We need him, Rand said quickly.
His words slowed under surprised stares from the elders and Varen, but he went on stubbornly.
We need him to go with us, and he wants to.
Loyal's a friend, Perrin said, at the same time that Matt said,
He doesn't get in the way, and he carries his own weight.
Neither of them appeared comfortable at having the elders' focus shift to them, but they did not back down.
Is there some reason he cannot come with us? Ingtar asked.
As Matt says, he has held his own. I don't know that we need him, but if he wants to come, why?
We do need him, Varen broke in smoothly. Few any longer know the ways, but Loyal has studied them. He can decipher the guidings.
Allar eyed them each in turn, then settled to a study of Rand. She looked as if she knew things. All the elders did, but she most of all.
Varen says you are Taviran, she said at last. And I can feel it in you. That I can do so means that you must be very strongly Taviran indeed, for such talents ever run weakly in us, if at all. Have you drawn Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Hallen, into Tomorrow Island, the web the pattern weaves around you?
I just want to find the horn and...
Rand let the rest of it die. Allar had not mentioned Matt's dagger. He did not know whether Varen had told the elders or held it back for some reason.
He is my friend, eldest.
Your friend,
Allar said.
He is young, by our way of thinking. You are young too, but Taviran. You will look after him, and when the weaving is done, you will see that he comes safely home to Stedding Shangtai.
I will, he told her.
It had the feeling of a commitment, the swearing of an oath.
Then we will go to the waygate.
Outside, Loyal scrambled to his feet when they appeared, Allar and Varen leading. Ingtar sent Huron off at a run to fetch Uno and the other soldiers. Loyal eyed the eldest warily, then fell in with Rand at the rear of the procession. The Ogier women who had been watching him were all gone.
Did the elders say anything about me? Did she?
He peered at Allar's broad back as she ordered Juin to have their horses brought. She started off with Varen, while Juin was still bowing himself away, bending her head to talk quietly.
She told Rand to take care of you, Matt told Loyal, solemnly, as they followed,
and see you got home safely as a babe. I don't see why you can't stay here and get married.
She said you could come with us.
Rand glared at Matt, which made Matt chortle under his breath. It sounded odd coming from that drawn face. Loyal was twirling the stem of a trueheart blossom between his fingers.
Did you go picking flowers? Rand asked.
Aerith gave it to me.
Loyal watched the yellow petals spin.
She really is very pretty, even if Matt does not see it.
Does that mean you don't want to go with us after all? Loyal gave a start.
What? Oh, no. I mean, yes. I do want to go. She only gave me a flower. Just a flower.
He took a book out of his pocket, though, and pressed the blossom under the front cover. As he returned the book, he murmured to himself, barely loud enough for Rand to hear,
"And she said I was handsome, too."
Matt let out a wheeze and doubled over, staggering along, clutching his sides, and Loyal's cheeks colored.
"Well, she said it. I didn't."
Perrin rapped Matt smartly on the top of his head with his knuckles. "Nobody ever said Matt was handsome. He's just jealous."
"That's not true," Matt said, straightening abruptly. "Marisa Ellen thinks I'm handsome. She told me so more than once."
"Is Marisa pretty?"
Loyal asked.
"She has a face like a goat," Perrin said blandly.
Matt choked, trying to get his protests out. Rand grinned in spite of himself. Marisa was almost as pretty as Egwene, and this was almost like old times, almost like being back home, bantering back and forth, and nothing more important in the world than a laugh and twitting the other fellow. As they made their way through the town, Ogier greeted the eldest, bowing or curtsying, eyeing the human visitors with interest. Alar's set face kept anyone from stopping to speak, though. The only thing that indicated when they left the town was the absence of the mounds. There were still Ogier about, examining trees or sometimes working with pitch and saw or axe, where there were dead limbs or where a tree needed more sunlight. They handled the tasks tenderly. Juin joined them, leading their horses, and Hurin came riding with Uno and the other soldiers and the pack horses just before Alar pointed and said,
"It is over there."
The banter died. Rand felt a momentary surprise. The waygate had to be outside the steading. The ways had been begun with the one power. They could not have been made inside, but there was nothing to indicate they had crossed the boundary. Then he realized there was a difference. The sense of something lost that he had felt since entering the steading was gone. That gave him another sort of chill. Sidin was there again, waiting. Alar led them past a tall oak, and there, in a small clearing, stood the big slab of the waygate, the front of it delicately worked in tightly woven vines and leaves from 100 different plants. Around the edge of the clearing, the Ogier had built a low stone coping that seemed as if it had grown there, suggesting a circle of roots. The look of it made Rand uncomfortable. It took him a moment to realize that the roots suggested were those of bramble and briar, burning leaf and itch oak. The eldest stopped short of the coping.
"The wall is meant to warn away any who comes here. Not that many of us do. I myself will not cross it, but you may."
Juin did not go as close as she did. He kept rubbing his hands in the front of his coat and would not look at the waygate.
"Thank you," Varen told her. "The need is great, or I would not have asked it."
Rand tensed as the Aes Sedai stepped over the coping and approached the waygate. Loyal took a deep breath and muttered to himself. Uno and the rest of the soldiers shifted in their saddles and loosened swords in their scabbards. There was nothing along the ways against which a sword would be any use, but it was something to convince themselves they were ready. Only Ingtar and the Aes Sedai seemed calm. Even Alla gripped her skirt with both hands. Varen plucked the Avendisora leaf, and Rand leaned forward intently. He knew an urge to assume the void, to be where he could reach Sidine if he needed to. The greenery carved across the waygate stirred in an unfelt breeze, leaves fluttering as a gap opened down the center of the mass, and the two halves began to swing open. Rand stared at the first crack. There was no dull, silvery reflection behind it, only blackness blacker than pitch.
"Close it!" he shouted. "The black wind! Close it!"
Varen took one startled look and thrust the three-pointed leaf back in among all the varied leaves already there. It stayed when she took her hand away and back toward the coping. As soon as the Avendisora leaf was back in its place, the waygate immediately began to close. The crack disappeared, vines and leaves merging, hiding the blackness of Machin Shin. And the waygate was only stone again, if stone carved in a nearer semblance of life than seemed possible. Alar let out a shuddering breath.
"Machin Shin, so close."
"It didn't try to come out," Rand said. Juin made a strangled sound.
I have told you, Varen said. The Black Wind is a creature of the ways. It cannot leave them.
She sounded calm, but she still wiped her hands on her skirt. Rand opened his mouth, then gave it up.
And yet, she went on, I wonder at it being here. First in Kyrian, now here. I wonder.
She gave Rand a sidelong glance that made him jump. The look was so quick that he did not think anyone else noticed it, but to Rand it seemed to connect him with the Black Wind.
I have never heard of this,
Alar said slowly.
Machin Shin waiting when a waygate was opened. It always roamed the ways. But it has been long, and perhaps the Black Wind hungers and hopes to catch some unwary one entering a gate. Varen, assuredly you cannot use this waygate. And however great your need, I cannot say I am sorry. The ways belong to the shadow now.
Rand frowned at the waygate.
Could it be following me?
There were too many questions. Had Fane somehow ordered the Black Wind? Varen said it could not be done, and why would Fane demand that he follow, then try to stop him? He only knew that he believed the message. He had to go to Toman Head. If they found the Horn of Valir and Matt's dagger under a bush tomorrow, he still had to go. Varen stood with eyes unfocused in thought. Matt was sitting on the coping with his head in his hands, and Perrin watched him worriedly. Loyal seemed relieved that they could not use the waygate and ashamed at being relieved.
We are done for here, Ingtar announced. Varen said, I followed you here against my better judgment, but I can no longer follow. I mean to return to Kyrian. Barthanas can tell me where the Dark Friends went, and somehow I will make him do it.
Fane went to Toman Head, Rand said wearily. And where he went, that's where the horn is and the dagger. I suppose, Perrin shrugged reluctantly. I suppose we could try another waygate at another steading. Loyal stroked his chin and spoke quickly as if to make up for his relief at the failure here.
Steading Cantuan lies just above the river Irelel, and Steading Tajin is east of it in the spine of the world. But the waygate in Camelon, where the grove was, is closer, and the gate in the grove at Tarvalen is closest of all.
Whichever waygate we try to use, Varen said absently, I fear we will find Machin Shin waiting.
Alar looked at her questioningly, but the Aes Sedai said no more that anyone could hear. She muttered to herself instead, shaking her head as if arguing with herself.
What we need, Huron said diffidently, is one of those portal stones.
He looked to Alar, then Varen, and when neither told him to stop, he went on, sounding increasingly confident.
The Lady Selene said those old Sedai had studied those worlds, and that was how they knew how to make the ways. And that place we were, well, it only took us 2 days less to travel 100 leagues. If we could use a portal stone to go to that world, or one like it, why, it'd take no more than a week or two to reach the Arath Ocean. And we could come back right on Toman Head. Maybe it isn't so quick as the ways, but it's a long sight quicker than riding off west. What do you say, Lord Ingtar? Lord Rand?
Varen answered him.
What you suggest might be possible, Sniffer, but as well hope to open this waygate again and find Machin Shin gone, as hope to find a portal stone. I know none closer than the Aiel Waste, though we could go back into Kinslayer's Dagger if you or Rand or Loyal think you could find that stone again.
Rand looked at Matt. His friend had lifted his head hopefully at this talk of the stones. A few weeks, Varen had said. If they simply rode west, Matt would never live to see Toman Head.
I can find it, Rand said reluctantly.
He felt ashamed.
Matt's going to die. Dark Friends have the Horn of Valir. Fane will hurt Emmon's field if you don't follow him. And you're afraid to channel the power. Once to go and once to come back. Twice more won't drive you mad.
What really made him afraid, though, was the eagerness that leaped inside him at the thought of channeling again, of feeling the power fill him, of feeling truly alive.
I do not understand this,
Alar said slowly.
The portal stones have not been used since the Age of Legends. I did not think there was anyone who still knew how to use them.
The brown Adja knows many things, Varen said dryly, and I know how the stones may be used. The eldest nodded.
Truly there are wonders in the White Tower of which we do not dream. But if you can use a portal stone, there is no need for you to ride to Kinslayer's Dagger. There is a stone not far from where we stand.
The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and the pattern provides what is needful.
The absent look dropped from Varen's face altogether.
Take us to it, she said briskly. We have lost more than enough time already.
Chapter 37 What Might Be. Allar led them away from the waygate at a dignified pace, though Juin seemed more than anxious to leave the waygate behind. Matt, at least, looked ahead eagerly, and Hurin seemed confident, while Loyal appeared concerned more that Allar might change her mind about his going than about anything else. Rand did not hurry as he pulled Red along by the reins. He did not think Varen meant to use the stone herself. The gray stone column stood upright near a beach almost 100 feet tall and 4 paces thick. Rand would have thought it a big tree before he saw the great trees. There was no warning coping here, only a few wildflowers pushing through the leafy mulch of the forest floor. The portal stone itself was weathered, but the symbols covering it were still clear enough to make out. The mounted Shinaran soldiers spread out in a loose circle around the stone, and those afoot.
We stood it upright, Allar said, when we found it many years ago, but we did not move it. It seemed to resist being moved.
She went right up to it and laid a big hand on the stone.
I have always thought of it as a symbol of what has been lost, what has been forgotten. In the age of legends, it could be studied and somewhat understood. To us, it is only stone.
More than that, I hope.
Varen's voice grew brisker.
Eldest, I thank you for your help. Forgive us for our lack of ceremony in leaving you, but the wheel waits for no woman. At least we will no longer disturb the peace of your steading.
We called the stonemasons back from Kyrian, Allar said. But we still hear what happens in the world outside. False dragons, the great hunt of the horn. We hear, and it passes us by. I do not think Tarmon Gaydon will pass us by or leave us in peace. Fare you well, Varen, said I. All of you farewell, and may you shelter in the palm of the Creator's hand. Juin?
She paused only for a glance at Loyal and a last admonitory look at Rand, and then the Ogier were gone among the trees. There was a creaking of saddles as the soldiers shifted. Ingtar looked around the circle they made.
Is this necessary, Varen said I? Even if it can be done. We do not even know if the Dark Friends really have taken the horn to Tomanhead. I still believe I can make Barthanas.
If we cannot be sure, Varen said mildly, cutting him off, then Tomanhead is as good a place to look as any other. More than once I've heard you say you would ride to Sheol Ghul, if need be, to recover the horn. Do you hold back now at this?
She gestured to the stone under the smooth-barked tree.
Ingtar's back stiffened.
I hold back nothing. Take us to Tomanhead, or take us to Sheol Ghul. If the horn of Elir lies at the end, I will follow you.
That is well, Ingtar. Now, Rand, you have been transported by a portal stone more recently than I. Come.
She motioned to him, and he led Red over to her at the stone.
You've used a portal stone?
He glanced over his shoulder to make sure no one else was close enough to hear.
Then you don't mean for me to.
He gave a relieved shrug.
Varen looked at him blandly.
I have never used a stone. That is why your use is more recent than mine. I am well aware of my limits. I would be destroyed before I came close to channeling enough power to work a portal stone. But I know a little of them. Enough to help you a bit.
But I don't know anything.
He led his horse around the stone, looking it up and down.
The one thing I remember is the symbol for our world. Selene showed me. But I don't see it here.
Of course not.
not on a stone in our world. The symbols are aids in getting to a world. She shook her head. What I would not give to talk with this girl of yours, or better, to put my hands on her book. It is generally thought that no copies of Mirrors of the Wheel survived the breaking hole. Serafella always tells me there are more books that we believe lost than I could credit waiting to be found. Well, no use in worrying over what I don't know. I do know some things. The symbols on the top half of the stone stand for worlds. Not all the worlds that might be, of course. Apparently not every stone connects to every world, and the Aes Sedai of the Age of Legends believed that there were possible worlds no stones at all touched. Do you see nothing that sparks a memory?
Nothing. If he found the right symbol, he could use it to find Fain in the Horn, to save Matt, to stop Fain hurting Emmons Field. If he found the symbol, he would have to touch Sidene. He wanted to save Matt and stop Fain, but he did not want to touch Sidene. He was afraid to channel, and he hungered for it like a starving man for food.
I don't remember anything.
Varen sighed.
The symbols at the bottom indicate stones at other places. If you know the trick of it, you could take us, not to this same stone in another world, but to one of those others there, or even to one of them here. It was something akin to traveling, I think, but just as no one remembers how to travel, no one remembers the trick. Without that knowledge, trying it might easily destroy us all.
She pointed to two parallel wavy lines crossed by an odd squiggle, carved low on the column.
That indicates a stone on Toman Head. It is one of three stones for which I know the symbol, the only one of those three I visited. And what I learned, after nearly being caught by the snows in the mountains of mist and freezing my way across Almuth Plain, was absolutely nothing. Do you play at dice or cards, Randall Thor?
Matt's the gambler. Why?
Yes. Well, we'll leave him out of this, I think. These other symbols are also known to me.
With one finger, she outlined a rectangle containing eight carvings that were much alike, a circle and an arrow. But in half, the arrow was contained inside the circle, while in the others, the point pierced the circle through. The arrows pointed left, right, up, and down, and surrounding each circle was a different line of what Rand was sure was script, though in no language he knew, all curving lines that suddenly became jagged hooks, then flowed on again.
At least, Varen went on, I know this much about them. Each stands for a world, the study of which led eventually to the making of the ways. These are not all of the worlds studied, but the only ones for which I know the symbols. This is where gambling comes in. I don't know what any of these worlds is like. It is believed there are worlds where a year is only a day here, and others where a day is a year here. There are supposed to be worlds where the very air would kill us at a breath, and worlds that barely have enough reality to hold together. I would not speculate on what might happen if we found ourselves in one of those. You must choose. As my father would have said, it's time to roll the dice.
Rand stared, shaking his head. I could kill all of us, whatever I choose.
Are you not willing to take that risk? For the Horn of Valir? For Matt?
Why are you so willing to take it? I don't even know if I can do it. It doesn't work every time I try. He knew no one had come any closer, but he looked anyway. All of them waited in a loose circle around the stone, watching, but not close enough to eavesdrop.
Sometimes Sidene is just there. I can feel it. But it might as well be on the moon as far as touching it. And even if it does work, what if I take us someplace we can't breathe? What good will that do, Matt, or the horn? You are the dragon reborn, she said quietly. Oh, you can die, but I don't think the pattern will let you die until it is done with you. Then again, the shadow lies on the pattern now, and who can say how that affects the weaving? All you can do is follow your destiny.
I am Randall Thor, he growled. I am not the dragon reborn. I won't be a false dragon.
You are what you are. Will you choose, or will you stand here until your friend dies?
Rand heard his teeth grinding and forced himself to unclench his jaw. The symbols could all have been exactly alike for all they meant to him. The script could as well have been a chicken's scratching. At last he settled on one with an arrow pointing left because it pointed toward Toman Head. An arrow that pierced the circle because it had broken free as he wanted to. He wanted to laugh. Such small things on which to gamble all their lives.
Come closer, Varen ordered the others. It will be best if you are near.
They obeyed with only a little hesitation.
It is time to begin, she said as they gathered round.
She threw back her cloak and put her hands on the column, but Rand saw her watching him from the corner of her eye. He was aware of nervous coughing and throat clearing from the men around the stone, a curse from Uno at someone hanging back, a weak joke from Matt, a loud gulp from Loyal. He took the void. It was so easy now. The flame consumed fear and passion and was gone almost before he thought to form it. Gone, leaving only emptiness and shining sidine, sickening, tantalizing, stomach-turning, seductive. He reached for it, and it filled him, made him alive. He did not move a muscle, but he felt as if he were quivering with the rush of the one power into him. The symbol formed itself, an arrow piercing a circle, floating just beyond the void, as hard as the stuff it was carved on. He let the one power flow through him to the symbol. The symbol shimmered, flickered.
Something is happening, Varen said. Something.
The world flickered. The iron lock spun across the farmhouse floor, and Rand dropped the hot tea kettle as a huge figure with ram's horns on its head loomed in the doorway with the darkness of winter night behind it.
Run!
Tam shouted. His sword flashed and the Trolloc toppled, but it grappled with Tam as it fell, pulling him down. More crowded in at the door, black mailed shapes with human faces distorted with muzzles and beaks and horns, oddly curved swords stabbing at Tam as he tried to struggle to his feet, spiked axes swinging, red blood on steel.
Father!
Rand screamed. Clawing his belt knife from its sheath, he threw himself over the table to help his father, and screamed again as the first sword ran through his chest. Blood bubbled up into his mouth, and a voice whispered inside his head,
I have won again, Luz Theron.
Flicker. Rand struggled to hold the symbol, dimly aware of Varen's voice.
Is not...
The power flooded. Flicker. Rand was happy after he married Egwene and tried not to let the moods take him, the times when he thought there should have been something more, something different. News of the world outside came into the Two Rivers with peddlers and merchants come to buy wool and tobacco. Always news of fresh troubles, of wars and false dragons everywhere. There was a year when neither merchants nor peddlers came, and when they returned the next, they brought word that Utter Hawkwing's armies had come back, or their descendants at least. The old nations were broken, it was said, and the world's new masters, who used chained Aes Sedai in their battles, had torn down the White Tower and salted the ground where Tar Valon had stood. There were no more Aes Sedai. It all made little difference in the Two Rivers. Crops still had to be planted, sheep sheared, lambs tended. Tam had grandsons and granddaughters to dandle on his knee before he was laid to rest beside his wife, and the old farmhouse grew new rooms. Egwene became Wisdom, and most thought she was even better than the old Wisdom Nynaeve Almira had been. It was as well she was, for her cures that worked so miraculously on others were only just able to keep Rand alive from the sickness that constantly seemed to threaten him. His moods grew worse, blacker, and he raged that this was not what was meant to be. Egwene grew frightened when the moods were on him, for strange things sometimes happened when he was at his bleakest. Lightning storms she had not heard listening to the wind, wildfires in the forest. But she loved him and cared for him and kept him sane, though some muttered that Randall Thor was crazy and dangerous. When she died, he sat alone for long hours by her grave, tears soaking his gray-flecked beard. His sickness came back, and he wasted. He lost the last two fingers on his right hand and one on his left. His ears looked like scars, and men muttered that he smelled of decay. His blackness deepened.
Yet when the dire news came, none refused to accept him at their side. Trollocs and fades and things undreamed of had burst out of the blight, and the world's new masters were being thrown back for all the powers they wielded. So Rand took up the bow, he had just fingers enough left to shoot, and limped with those who marched north to the River Tarin. Men from every village, farm, and corner of the two rivers, with their bows and axes and boar spears and swords that had lain rusting in attics. Rand wore a sword, too, with a heron on the blade, that he had found after Tam died, though he knew nothing of how to use it. Women came, too, shouldering what weapons they could find, marching alongside the men. Some laughed, saying that they had the strange feeling they had done this before. And at the Tarin, the people of the two rivers met the invaders. Endless ranks of Trollocs, led by nightmare fades beneath a dead black banner that seemed to eat the light. Rand saw that banner and thought the madness had taken him again, for it seemed that this was what he had been born for, to fight that banner. He sent every arrow at it, straight as his skill in the void would serve, never worrying about the Trollocs forcing their way across the river or the men and women dying to either side of him. It was one of those Trollocs that ran him through before it loped howling for blood deeper into the two rivers. And as he lay on the bank of the Tarin, watching the sky seem to grow dark at noon, breath coming ever slower, he heard a voice say, "I have won again, Luz Theron. Flicker." The arrow and circle contorted into parallel wavy lines, and he fought it back again. Theron's voice,
"Right. Something..."
The power raged. Flicker. Tam tried to console Rand when Egwene took sick and died just a week before their wedding. Nynaeve tried too, but she was shaken herself, since for all her skill she had no idea what it was that had killed the girl. Rand had sat outside Egwene's house while she died, and there seemed to be nowhere in Emmons Field he could go that he did not still hear her screaming. He knew he could not stay. Tam gave him a sword with a heron-mark blade, and though he explained little of how a shepherd in the two rivers had come by such a thing, he taught Rand how to use it. On the day Rand left, Tam gave him a letter he said might get Rand taken into the army of Ilion, and hugged him, and said, "I've never had another son or wanted another. Come back with a wife like I did if you can, boy, but come back in any case." Rand had his money stolen in Bearlawn, though, and his letter of introduction, and almost his sword, and he met a woman called Min who told him such crazy things about himself that he finally left the city to get away from her. Eventually, his wanderings brought him to Camelin, and there his skill with the sword earned him a place in the Queen's Guards. Sometimes he found himself looking at the daughter heir Elaine, and at such times he was filled with odd thoughts that this was not the way things were supposed to be, that there should be something more to his life. Elaine did not look at him, of course. She married a Tyran prince, though she did not seem happy in it. Rand was just a soldier, once a shepherd from a small village so far toward the western border that only lines on a map any longer truly connected it to Andor. Besides, he had a dark reputation as a man of violent moods. Some said he was mad, and in ordinary times perhaps not even his skill with the sword would have kept him in the guard, but these were not ordinary times. False dragons sprang up like weeds. Every time one was taken down, two more proclaimed themselves, or three, till every nation was torn by war. And Rand's star rose, for he had learned the secret of his madness, a secret he knew he had to keep and did. He could channel. There were always places, times, in a battle when a little channeling, not big enough to be noticed in the confusion, could make luck. Sometimes it worked, this channeling, and sometimes not. But it worked often enough. He knew he was mad and did not care. A wasting sickness came on him, and he did not care about that either, and neither did anyone else. For word had come that Artur Hawkwing's armies had returned to reclaim the land. Rand led 1,000 men when the Queen's guards crossed the Mountains of Mist. He never thought of turning aside to visit the two rivers. He seldom thought of the two rivers at all anymore. And he commanded the guard when the shattered remnants retreated back across the mountains. The length of Andor he fought and fell back amid hordes of fleeing refugees until at last he came to Camelin. Many of the people of Camelin had fled already and many counseled the army to retreat further. But Elaine was queen now and vowed she would not leave Camelin. She would not look at his ruined face, scarred by his sickness, but he could not leave her. And so what was left of the queen's guards prepared to defend the queen while her people ran. The power came to him during the battle for Camelin, and he hurled lightning and fire among the invaders and split the earth under their feet. Yet the feeling came again, too, that he had been born for something else. For all he did, there were too many of the enemy to stop, and they also had those who could channel. At last, a lightning bolt hurled Ran from the palace wall, broken, bleeding, and burned. And as his last breath rattled in his throat, he heard a voice whisper, "I have won again, Luz Theron. Flicker." Ran struggled to hold the void as it quivered under the hammer blows of the world flickering, to hold the one symbol as 1,000 of them darted along the surface of the void. He struggled to hold on to any one symbol. "Is wrong," Varen screamed. The power was everything. Flicker, 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 flicker. He was a soldier, he was a shepherd, he was a beggar and a king. He was farmer, gleeman, sailor, carpenter. He was born, lived, and died an Aiel. He died mad, he died rotting, he died of sickness, accident, age. He was executed, and multitudes cheered his death. He proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn and flung his banner across the sky. He ran from the power and hid. He lived and died never knowing. He held off the madness and the sickness for years. He succumbed between two winters. Sometimes Moraine came and took him away from the two rivers, alone or with those of his friends who had survived winter night. Sometimes she did not. Sometimes other Aes Sedai came for him. Sometimes the Red Aja. Egwene married him. Egwene, stern-faced in the stole of the Ammerlin seat, led the Aes Sedai who gentled him. Egwene, with tears in her eyes, plunged a dagger into his heart, and he thanked her as he died. He loved other women, married other women, Elaine and Min, and a fair-haired farmer's daughter met on the road to Camelin. And women he had never seen before, he lived those lives. 100 lives, more. So many he could not count them. And at the end of every story, as he lay dying, as he drew final breath, a voice whispered in his ear, "I have won again, Luz Theron." Flicker, 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 flicker. The void vanished. Contact with Sidene fled, and Rand fell with a thud that would have knocked the breath out of him if he had not already been half numb. He felt rough stone under his cheek and his hands. It was cold. He was aware of Varen struggling from her back to her hands and knees. He heard someone vomit roughly and raised his head. Una was kneeling on the ground, scrubbing the back of his hand across his mouth. Everyone was down, and the horses stood stiff-legged and quivering, eyes wild and rolling. Ingtar had his sword out, gripping the hilt so hard the blade shook, staring at nothing. Loyal sat sprawled, wide-eyed and stunned. Matt was huddled in a ball with his arms wrapped around his head, and Perrin had his fingers dug into his face, as if he wanted to rip away whatever he had seen, or perhaps rip out the eyes that had seen it. None of the soldiers were any better. Massima wept openly, tears streaming down his face, and Huron was looking around, as if for a place to run. "What?" Ran stopped to swallow. He was lying on rough, weathered stone, half buried in the dirt. "What happened?"
"A surge in the One Power."
The Aes Sedai tottered to her feet and pulled her cloak tight with a shiver.
"It was as if we were being forced, pushed. It seemed to come out of nowhere. You must learn to control it. You must. That much of the power could burn you to a cinder." "Varen, I lived. I was..."
He realized the stone under him was rounded. The portal stone. Hastily, shakily, he pushed himself to his feet.
"Varen, I lived and died, I don't know how many times. Every time it was different, but it was me. It was me."
"The lines that joined the worlds that might be, laid by those who knew the numbers of chaos."
Varen shuddered. She seemed to be talking to herself.
"I've never heard it, but there is no reason we would not be born in those worlds. Yet the lives we lived would be different lives." "Of course. Different lives for the different ways things might have happened."
"Is that what happened? We saw how our lives could have been?"
I have won again, Luz Theron. No, I am Randall Thor.
Theron gave herself a shake and looked at him.
Does it surprise you that your life might go differently if you made different choices or different things happened to you? Though I never thought I... Well, the important thing is we are here, though not as we hoped.
Where is here? He demanded. The woods of Steading Tsofu were gone, replaced by rolling land. There seemed to be forest not far to the west and a few hills. It had been high in the day when they gathered around the stone in the steading, but here the sun stood low toward afternoon in a gray sky. The handful of trees nearby were bare-branched, or else had a few leaves bright with color. A cold wind gusted from the east, sending leaves scurrying across the ground.
Toman Head, Theron said. This is the stone I visited. You should not have tried to bring us directly here. I don't know what went wrong. I don't suppose I ever will. But from the trees, I would say it is well into late autumn. Rand, we haven't gained any time by it. We've lost time. I would say we have easily spent 4 months in coming here.
But I didn't.
You must let me guide you in these things. I cannot teach you, it's true, but perhaps I can at least keep you from killing yourself, and the rest of us, by overreaching. Even if you do not kill yourself, if the dragon reborn burns himself out like a guttering candle, who will face the Dark One then?
She did not wait for him to renew his protests, but went to Ingtar instead. The Shinaran gave a start when she touched his arm and looked at her with frantic eyes.
I walk in the light, he said hoarsely. I will find the Horn of Valir and pull down Sheol Ghul's power. I will.
Of course you will, she said soothingly.
She took his face in her hands and he drew a sudden breath, abruptly recovering from whatever had held him. Except that memory still lay in his eyes.
There, she said, that will do for you. I will see how I can help the rest. We may still recover the horn, but our path has not grown smoother.
As she started around among the others, stopping briefly by each, Rand went to his friends. When he tried to straighten Matt, Matt jerked and stared at him, then grabbed Rand's coat with both hands.
Rand, I'd never tell anyone about you. I wouldn't betray you. You have to believe that.
He looked worse than ever, but Rand thought it was mostly fright.
I do, Rand said.
He wondered what lives Matt had lived and what he had done.
He must have told someone, or he wouldn't be so anxious about it.
He could not hold it against him. Those had been other Matts, not this one. Besides, after some of the alternatives he had seen for himself...
I believe you. Perrin?
The curly-haired youth dropped his hands from his face with a sigh. Red marks scored his forehead and cheeks where his nails had dug in. His yellow eyes hid his thoughts.
We don't have many choices, really, do we, Rand? Whatever happens, whatever we do, some things are almost always the same.
He let out another long breath.
Where are we? Is this one of those worlds you and Huron were talking about?
It's Toman Head, Rand told him, in our world, or so Varen says. And it is autumn.
Matt looked worried.
No, I don't want to know how it happened. But how are we going to find Fane and the dagger now? He could be anywhere by this time.
He's here, Rand assured him.
He hoped he was right. Fane had had time to take ship for any place he wanted to go. Time to ride to Women's Field or Tarvalin.
Please, Light, he didn't get tired of waiting. If he's heard of Gwaine or anybody in Emmons Field, I'll... Light, burn me, I tried to come in time.
The larger towns of Toman Head are all west of here, Varen announced loudly enough for all to hear. Everyone was on their feet again except for Rand and his two friends. She came and put her hands on Matt as she spoke.
Not that there are many villages large enough to call towns. If we are to find any trace of the Dark Friends, to the west is the place to begin, and I think we should not waste the daylight sitting here.
When Matt blinked and stood up, he still looked ill, but he moved spryly. She put her hands on Perrin. Rand backed away when she reached for him.
Don't be foolish, she told him.
I don't want your help, he said quietly. Or any Aes Sedai help. Her lips twitched.
As you wish.
They mounted immediately and rode west, leaving the portal stone behind. No one protested, Rand least of all.
Light, let me not be too late.